Welcome into the Huddle Up Podcast. Today is Tuesday, April 23rd. JP Shadrick, John Osier from the Hyundai Studios. And Bucky Brooks is in Los Angeles. Draft week is upon us. It's Tuesday. The draft begins Thursday. And the Duval Draft Party presented by Donovan Air Electric and Plumbing coming up 7 o'clock Thursday night. Register at jaguars.com/draft party. It is the week of Bucky Brooks. You cannot turn on a television anywhere and not see his smiling face. And this is your Super Bowl. Bucky is finally here.
It is finally here. I'm really excited about the week. I'm excited about what is going to happen over the three-day weekend, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, seeing what all these players go. And more importantly, seeing who the Jaguars is able to pick up to help the squad.
Yeah, I mean, we're here. JP, we were talking about it. I kind of leave the pre-draft dig to Bucky, if you follow me, like knowing all the players. I'm more fascinated, I guess, by how this team's thinking going into it, sort of what their strategy is. I gave up a long time ago trying to grade a draft right after because I don't know enough about the players, how they're going to translate. What I do like to look at is, did they stick to a plan? What did they try to get accomplished going in? Did they try to use their capital? How that sort of thing played out. So that's what I'll sort of be watching this week.
Yeah, and that's especially from the Jags' perspective. They did a lot of work in free agency this year to fill some holes. We talked about that, obviously. So it kind of sets up some possibilities. There's always the talk of possibly moving up or moving back in the draft. Trent Baalke does that a lot, especially in the later rounds, or at least in his past has been known to do that. So all that conversation's out there this week too as well, Bucky. So, I mean, this is the week, though. Up to this point, all these rumors are just rumors. So at what point do some of these rumors become real life in pre-draft talk?
I'll tell you, when the card turns in, when the card's turned in.
Yeah, no, the rumors and speculation begins to kind of become real once you get to about middle of Wednesday, the day before the draft. That's when you can kind of hone in. Right now, I'll be honest with you, everyone with their teams is kind of like put your own ghost. Your texts and your phone calls are unanswered. So a lot of it is people trying to connect the dot. Somehow when we get within 24 hours of the draft, then it kind of opens up. You begin to get real information. But the last week or so, it's just been a lot of just hodgepodge, throwing stuff on the wall to see what sticks.
Bucky, let me ask you this. To me, for the Jags, this offseason has felt, I guess as much as possible, as sort of pushing everything to the table. And maybe it's because they went after free agency so hard. But does that translate, does that extend to the draft in the sense of if you're all in, if you think you need to go get better, improved positions, does that mean you give up future equity to try to move up? I mean, is it that extreme? And is this franchise in a place where you want to do that?
You know, what's funny is the analytics community would tell you that it's never beneficial to move up because what you're giving up is typically not enough to offset what you're going to get back in terms of the player. Normally, the players that are closely graded, it's not substantial enough in terms of the talent disparity to allow you to make you want to give up multiple picks and those things for the player. I will say this. I think situation where the Jaguars have to be honest, look at themselves and say, hey, here's where we are. Here are the needs that we need to address. Here's what we attacked in free agency. Let's try and get the best player available that also fits a position of need where we're not stretching ourselves to get the player, but we're getting a player that is worthy of being drafted at that pick, but he also feels a need that we desperately need to make sure that we address.
But doesn't the analytics sometimes go out the window? If you're sitting at 17 and you think there's only three wide receivers and you've got to get up to 8 to get one, and you isn't that where sort of the analytics sometimes that goes out the window and you're window shopping and you really love that gold watch?
I mean, now it has worked out in the past for some people. Like I think about the Atlanta Falcons moving up to get Julio Jones. But you better make sure that that player
he better be good.
A gold jacket type player. He better be good. Because when you give up a lot of capital and that player is not good, then it's an issue. And remember this, the first round is really a coin flip. I mean, you're talking about a 50 to maybe 60% hit rate in terms of star power. So you're already at a situation where it's random, and now you're giving up other stuff to take a pick that's still not guaranteed to be what you want it to be. It's tough. I think Balky, though, has shown that he'll move around the board for players that he identifies as guys that he wants, that he thinks will come in and address the situation. I just think in this draft in particular, the first two and a half, three rounds are solid. After that, there's a huge drop-off. And so if you are going to give up picks, this might be the year to give up some of those later-round picks because of the COVID backup and all that other stuff. The latter part of the draft is not as strong as it has been in the past.
And I would say this, too, and Bucky, you'll have a better idea of this. If you're moving up in the first round to that high for that kind of player, it's not just a GM's decision. This is going to be a full organizational conversation about the future and what picks and why we're giving them up and what's the return. And it's not just one person's call at that point.
But you know who gets blamed?
That one person gets blamed.
Well, yeah, because like that one person might be initiating the discussion to give up or to mortgage the future for a player. And at times it has worked out. Like normally you want to do those things for like a big time quarterback or a player at a premium position. Those premium positions are quarterback, pass rusher, cornerback, or like one of you guys now we were talking about like an offensive tackle or offensive playmaker, like a pass catcher. But if it's outside of that marquee position, then you better serve to just kind of sit and wait and just kind of let the board fall to you.
Huddle Up Podcast, JP Shadrick, John Osier, and Bucky Brooks. All right, GM Bucky, it is Tuesday ahead of Thursday's first round. Is your board set and finished? And what's next on your checklist the next 2 days?
Oh, now the board should have been done like before the combine. You shouldn't have a lot of movement. Once you see these guys work out, because the good scouts are the ones that evaluate everything off the tape. And like, the last game was played early January, so there hasn't been another football game playing that should sway your opinion. Yeah, you're trying to look at the combine and pro day workouts to help you kind of rearrange the order of similarly graded or closely graded players, but it shouldn't be these massive swings about, hey, this player's in the first round, there's in the third round. It shouldn't really work like that. What is going on for me personally, like you just going back, you're reviewing your notes, you're making sure that the players that you have in order, when you read the report, it sounds like a player that you really like. The problems that you have is when you look at these guys at different times, you can't watch them all at the same time. Sometimes there's a guy that you've given a higher grade to than what the verbiage in your report is. So you just want to match all those things up in the building. The Jaguars are making all the phone calls, calling all the agents, calling all the players, make sure they have the right numbers, making sure they know exactly where they're going to be on draft weekend. So when they do make the call, they can get in contact with them, because you cannot draft somebody that you don't make contact with first. That is a major no-no. That's the golden rule. Got to talk to them before you hand them the card.
Why?
Because you don't want to draft any dead guy. That is the thing. You want to make sure that the person is alive and well, that he's healthy, he hasn't been involved in an incident, an accident, or anything like that. So you want to make sure you talk to him, you ask him how you doing, you doing okay, any injuries, we good, we're about to hand in the card and take. So that is why it's important to have the right information, because you cannot submit a card on a player that you have not talked to.
Hold on, Bucky. There's got to be an example of this somewhere where the player has been like, you know what, yeah, I left something out.
What if he's in the toilet?
Well, then he needs to get out of the toilet, because you got to talk to him. I think years ago the Raiders may have drafted a person who was deceased. And so that is why it's really important that you talk to everybody. You want to make sure you talk to them. You have good numbers on them. And look, Balky and those guys will tell you, you not only have two numbers on every player, but you have two numbers and the agent's number. So you have the primary number that should be their cell phone. Then it may be a house number that you can ring if you can't get in contact with them on the cell phone. Then the last ditch effort is to make sure that you talk to the agent. And so the last couple
the
of
agent
weeks,
will tell
we've
you
been
he's in the toilet.
About, yeah, the agent, the agent should have it. If he doesn't know where they're at, problem. But so the last couple of weeks, when you heard about players, oh, I've talked to this team and that team, a lot of times those conversations are not real conversations about, hey, we're going to pick you. is more so making sure, hey, is this number good? Great. We may call you over draft weekend. That's how it goes.
Bucky, take me through the process of it's always fascinated me because it seems so impossible to do, but I know GMs try to do it, of trying to do multiple mocks before the draft just to get a feel for how the board's going to play out, sort of the draft rehearsals, just to get familiar with what you think might happen. I know as with the Colts, they did a lot of those. The last weeks before the draft were basically trying to find different people's mocks to see how it might play out if the board fell one way during the first round, trying to identify what other teams might do, just so they didn't feel unfamiliar once it started. I think you know what I'm getting at. What's the point of that?
So,
how hard is it to do? How complex is it?
So we would call that mocking the mock. And so what you do in the back of your draft room, when I was with the Carolina Panthers, we had a board that had all of the mock drafts from like the top eight prominent writers or experts that we felt like were the best at doing the mock drafts, guys who had real information, guys who kind of had an ear in various buildings. So it may be a Mel Kiper, a Todd McShay at the time. Now it would be Daniel Jeremiah, et cetera. So you would have all those mock drafts, their latest iterations, kind of up on a magnet board in the back. And what you're doing is you're trying to assess any patterns because you always believe that guys who are doing mock drafts, they have some inside information. And as you get closer to the draft, some of those names are real names. And so you're looking at it a few different ways. You're looking at, okay, what names are in the first round that we see all the time? Because then you got a general assessment of, okay, these guys are probably going to go in the first round. The other thing that you're looking for are patterns where you see the same name tied to the same team. And if you see this over a while, that information is coming from somewhere. So you begin to believe it. After you do those things, you then assign, like, say you have eight area scouts in the room. You may give all of those guys four teams, and then we're going to run a draft. And we run a mock draft, and the first guy takes the first pick. And if anything is thrown off, then it puts us in the mode of, hey, what we do if all of a sudden these guys are available at our pick? We hadn't thought about it, but these guys could be available because all it takes is one guy to do something that is unexpected on draft day. And so as a decision maker, you want to run through those various scenarios. So when you're live and on the clock, those 15 minutes, you've already rehearsed what you would do. You've already kind of thought about every conceivable situation and circumstance that, hey, I'm here, we're on the clock, this is what we're going to do if these are the players that are available. And if you don't have any players that you like, then you say we're going to trade back. But you want to have those conversations ahead of time. So now on draft day, the room is calm and we just execute a plan. You don't get outside of yourself. So it's no different than when Coach Peterson is talking to the players about, hey, just execute the play. Don't try and do too much. The same thing happens in the draft room. Hey, scouts, decision makers, let's just do what we've practiced. Let's not get outside of ourselves and make a decision based on the research that we've had.
And that's mostly round one, and then later on you're going off your board more.
A little bit, but like round two, like so because we now have 3 days, so at the end of the first round, at the end of Thursday, you'll have a little meeting Thursday night with all the scouts. You kind of talk about, hey, who's on the board? Let's begin to talk about what the second round could look like. Then you come in early on Friday and you'll start scrimmaging through some of those thoughts all over again. Hey, these guys are available. We didn't think this guy would be available in the second round. Is there anybody that we need to get up? Do we like what's available where we're picking? Do we feel like we need to move up or down the board? How do we want to play it? So Thursday night, but really Friday will be how do you attack day two, the second and third round. And then the final part of it is on Saturday when you're 4 through 7, it's the same thing. Hey, let's look at our board. Let's look at who's available. Are there anybody that are kind of like the blinking lights? Someone that we had a second round grade on, but for whatever reason, we're hitting the fourth round. This guy's available. What's going on? Let's do some phone calls. Let's make sure that we don't have bad information. Maybe there was an injury. Maybe there was a last minute character deal that came up that we didn't have. We just want to make sure. But if he's up there and we still like him, hey, at the beginning of the fourth round, we need to take this guy. So a lot of it is just continue to work through the plan and the scenarios. Each day requires a different game plan under an overall philosophy of how are we going to attack the draft and what do we want to come out of the draft with.
All right, we're back in just a moment with final thoughts ahead of Thursday's first round of the NFL draft. The Jags are celebrating their 30th season, and the time to get your 2024 season ticket membership is now. Be at the bank for every touchdown. Secure your seats at jaguars.com/tickets or call 904-633-2000. This is the Huddle Up Podcast. Welcome back to the Huddle Up Podcast. J.P. Shadrick, John Osier, Bucky Brooks, and the 2024 draft is almost here. The Jags will be on the clock at 17 overall. Join us at the bank Thursday, April 25th. The official Duval Draft Party is presented by Donovan Air Electric and Plumbing. The party starts at 7 o'clock. Tickets are free, but register now. Jaguars.com/draft party. Should be a nice crowd Thursday night. And
draft party.
The Jags will be at least going into the draft 17th. Hey, where? How many quarterbacks are going early ahead of the Jaguars, and how could that help shift some players down, Buck?
Okay, so you're talking about quarterbacks, passers. I think when it's all said and done, the first three that we've always talked about since the beginning are going to go 1, 2, and 3. And so in whatever order, it'll be Caleb Williams 1, then Drake May or Jaden Daniels will be 2 and 3. After that, the conversation then shifts to when is J.J. McCarthy going? Because he is the next domino to drop. Will someone trade up? Will the Giants make a move? Will the Minnesota Vikings feel compelled to make a move and take him? And then the wild card, I would say, is either Bo Nix or Michael Penix. If one of those guys go before the Jaguars pick, well, then it's going to be a really some blue chip players available at 17 that were not expected to be there. So whether that is one of the cornerbacks, Quinion Mitchell, Terrion Arnold, one of the interior players, maybe Byron Murphy, Johnny Newton from Illinois, they may be available. Or it might just be like a Brock Bowers sliding because whatever reason tied in the position. So it can be wide open for the Jaguars. So they can go in with a plan to think about, hey, we want to attack this area here where there's cornerback or whatever. But then they have to be nimble enough to take the best player that is there, particularly if it's a blue chip player that people had high grades on, that they're like, man, we didn't think this guy's going to be there, but he's too good for us to pass up at 17.
Hey, Bucky, I happen to believe that they need cornerback to play at a high level right now out of this draft. Mm-hmm. How long can they wait to get that? Is it 48? If they don't pick it at 17, do they have to move up? Because it feels to me like they're in a little bit of a, we need it at 17, but boy, do we love Byron Murphy now that he's there. We didn't expect him to be. You follow me?
Yeah, I follow you. So the good thing is at cornerback, I would say cornerback is one of the deepest positions in the draft. Now, some will debate like where that line kind of drops off, but I would tell you that there are a lot of starting cornerbacks that can be taken in the first or second round. The interior defender pool is a little shallower. So when you think about the defensive tackles, to me, there are two first-rounders on the inside. There's Byron Murphy, and then there's Jerzon Newton from Illinois. Those are the two that we can kind of say are rock-solid first-round talents on the inside. After that, it falls off because then you have Braden Fisk from Florida State. You have Brandon Dorlus from Oregon who could be available. And then after that is a significant drop-off. So if the Jaguars say that, hey, we want to put another defensive tackle into the rotation and Byron Murphy or Newton are there, then they can have that conversation. Hey, man, we need to make the move. You know, we need to make the move. We need to take him. And then we can come back in the second round and find a corner that can kind of fit the style of play that we want to play. The other thing that's important when we talk about cornerback, there's been a lot of conversation about Quinion Mitchell, Terrion Arnold, which one, Nate Wiggins, which one is really the best fit. I think it's really important for everyone to go back and listen to Ryan Nelson talk about how they want to play on the outside. They talked about playing bump and run, nose to nose, taking away the layups and doing those things. They talked about giving a man look, but it's really a zone. And so there's a huge difference between man-to-man corners and zone corners. Zone corners have to play with great vision, great eyes. They can be a little slower, but you're trading off some of the athleticism for instincts and ball skills and awareness. Whereas man-to-man guys are, man, I'm nose-to-nose. My eyes are on my man the entire way. So I need to have supreme athleticism, and I'm willing to give up some of the instincts and ball skills because he's going to have his back to the quarterback 75% of the time. So he's going to register a bunch of knockdowns, not interception. So that is important to distinguish. And we will learn a lot about how the Jaguars want to play based on the players that they pick on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, because that'll kind of let us know if we're going to be a man team or a zone team.
There you have it. The approach going into the 2024 NFL draft. It's coming up Thursday, Friday, Saturday, of course, wall-to-wall coverage on Jaguars.com. We'll be live after most every pick that the Jaguars make throughout all 3 days. Coming up tomorrow, John, it's Jags AM in the afternoon, though.
Yeah, Jags AM, not AM.
Jags PM.
Jags PM.
I suppose. That'll be with Brian Sexton in Detroit, where the draft will be this year. Kai Stevens, John Oge will be here in studio. And then, of course, Thursday, Jaguars happy hour, 4 o'clock, Bucky with the normal show. Tony Boselli will jump on with us on that day. And then 7:30, the pre-draft show on Jaguars.com, Jag Social. And then, of course, post-pick coverage after the first-round pick. And Bucky, I know you'll be joining us sporadically throughout the week.
Yeah, I think I may be on some of the AM, whatever AM, that's PM show, and maybe happy hour that won't really be happy hour because there won't be any wings and things where I'm at. But yeah, I'll be joining you guys, and I'm excited to see. Let me add one thing because we talked about I spent a lot of time on DB, and I've seen a lot of stuff on Twitter and X. Our fans are really worried about the wide receiver position, and there's a lot of speculation about 17. We got to go up and get Brian Thomas Jr. or are they going to take Adonai Mitchell and those guys? I do believe the Jags will address the wide receiver position. I just don't expect it to be the first round. I would be more inclined to think that someone like a Ricky Pearsall from Florida, someone like a Ladd McConkey, if he happens to be available in the second round, Roman Wilson, Malachi Corley, those guys could be more fits. And we talked about it last week. I think the wide receivers that are going to be targeted are not only going to be really good route runners, but I think there's going to be a premium placed on high IQ, very instinctive playmakers. This offense is one that is, I would say, is more of a thinking man's offense because they want to be interchangeable. I think what they would like to do is make sure that they have a bunch of high IQ players that can play multiple positions to make it work in the event that Zay Jones is unavailable or Christian Kirk or whatever, that they can just kind of move the lineup around and allow the offense to still have production while moving the pieces in place to best create the mismatches that they want on the perimeter.
There you have it.
It's done. I agree.
Speaking of high IQ, that's this podcast.
You have?
That's what we do.
It's IQ.
Yeah.
There is an IQ.
Kind of medium.
Right.
Kind of normal. Bucky, we'll talk to you later in the week, man.
Buck,
appreciate
thanks.
It.
All right, man. See you guys.
That's Bucky Brooks, John Oger. I'm JP Shadrick. Our thanks to Brent Reber and Joe Fortunato, and thanks to you for listening to the Huddle Up Podcast.